This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. And by AircraftLauncher.com, the UAV launcher that made Ag Eagle famous. AircraftLauncher.com helps fixed-wing drone suppliers and manufacturers launch their fixed-wing drones safely and efficiently with a self-contained bungee power catapult launcher. Learn more at AircraftLauncher.com. You're listening to episode 218 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max, how are we?
I'm good, David. We seem to be in a period of webinars these days. Webinars that have taken place and others that are coming up. Everyone is buzzing about the integration pilot program and holding webinars.
Well, pilot programs are important. Webinars are important, especially if they go off smoothly, which we'll get into a little bit about your little challenges with the FAA's webinar. But I guess we should probably talk about something other than webinars. What do you think?
Sure.
Should we talk about UAMs or maybe threatening drones? So I think we probably should get started. Well, our first story actually isn't a story. It's about a webinar. Last week, we talked about the fact that the FAA suddenly announced that they were going to have three webinars in reference to the pilot program. Now, yours truly, of course, has a day job, so he wasn't able to attend any of the webinars. However, my co-host, retired Max Flight, was able to sit in on one of them. So, Max, tell us your thoughts.
These were one-hour webinars from the FAA on the UAS Integration Pilot Program. The first portion of the webinar was a canned presentation, about a 17-minute video, and that was followed by a live Q&A session. The video, we actually have a link that you'll find in the show notes, and this is it's kind of like a PowerPoint-type presentation with voice over, and it gives an overview of the program, talks about the application process, the acceptance criteria, and maybe very significantly the deadlines for the milestones if you want to participate in this. So that's very important. As far as the overview, they reiterated that the objective of the pilot program is to do a number of things. They want to achieve beyond visual line of sight, as well as other complex operations like flight at night and flying over people, operational coordination with manned aircraft. They're also looking to promote innovation. Also, regulations that reduce the need for operations by exception, right? That's the 333 and other exception-based approaches to flying drones. They want to address safety concerns as well as balance national and local interests. So again, we've got that presentation or a link to that presentation. You can find it on the FAA's website as well, but you can look at that right in the show notes. Also, the Q&A session was pretty interesting. The sense that I got is that most of the people attending, at least the session I listened in on, are interested in participating in this pilot program. And the questions, many of them revolve around that. Things like who can be a lead applicant for the program? What about being a participant? And then there's this concept of being an interested party. And there's actually a little database of interested parties. You can join that list if you want to make yourself available for some of the projects. Some of the questions involve things like funding And the FAA said there will be no funding from the FAA for any of this. Other questions, things like how can Part 107 operators help? The answer to that was you want to partner with others, but don't wait to get started on that. The deadlines are coming up very, very fast. They also talked about there's going to be a dedicated Facebook group even for people who are participating in the program. So I recorded the Q&A from the session that I attended, and we'll have a link on our website on the show notes for this episode at the uavdigest.com/218. And you can listen in if you like. It runs about 40 minutes. It's fairly interesting. And we'll also put in the show notes links to some of the FAA web pages that are associated with this program. There's the UAS Integration Pilot Program web page. And then off of that is the resources associated with that. And there's a number of interesting things that you'll want to take a look at, especially if you're considering participating in this program. Overall, I think the webinars achieved what they were trying to. They answered a lot of questions. I think people got a little bit better understanding of the details behind how this program is actually going to operate. Just one other observation. You know, it occurred to me, David, that this didn't feel like something that had just been put together really quickly in response to the directive to the DOT and the FAA from President Trump. It felt like there were a lot of things in place, maybe not everything that they need to launch this program, but a lot of things felt like they were in place. So I think they've been working on this for some period of time.
Yeah, I seriously don't think that UAVs is on our president's radar. So I'm sure that it was presented to him as a way to be able to present as it's his own idea. But I'm sure that you're right. There was a lot of work up to this, and I'm okay with that. I'm glad to see that it makes the FAA and the DOT look a lot better when you know that they've actually put some thought into this ahead of schedule.
Maybe one final thing, just to sort of to reiterate that this is on a really short fuse. The deadline for lead applicants to submit a notice of intent to the FAA, that's the first step in this process. That deadline is November 28th, 2017, of course, which is going to come up real fast. Now, the lead applicants are the state and local governments, the tribal authorities that will take the role as the lead applicant. There are other participants, interested parties that can join in. But this notice of intent needs to be in by November 28th. That's pretty fast. And the first part of the actual application process starts with the application portal that the FAA has or will have. And that process starts December 13th. So this all happens very, very quickly.
Followed by January 4th, 2018. Lead applicants complete volume 3, 4, and 5, and 6 in the application portal. You're right. It sounds like, Max, they were ramped up for this, and away we go. I like these quick timelines, though. It seems like the FAA works better fast than they do when they're taking their old time. But because of that webinar and the pilot program, we've got another webinar to talk about. This is from our friends, the law firm of Hogan Lovells and their unmanned aircraft systems program. They're going to have a regulatory webinar on Thursday, November 16th, 2017. So we're recording this on the 10th, so a week from tonight, between 2 p.m. and 3 p.m. And it's going to be more about regulatory and policy developments, but with a spin towards the pilot program.
That's right. They're going to talk about things like the Part 107 waivers that have been granted to date and where those stand. There's also going to be participation by someone from CNN, and talking about their waiver to allow operations over people. That should be fairly interesting. And as you mentioned, David, they'll talk about the new UAS integration pilot program. They're also going to talk about the rollout of the land-sea system, the FAA's low-altitude authorization and notification capability, as well as some upcoming FAA rulemakings and some next steps moving forward. So it sounds like a very comprehensive webinar, and we'll have a link in the show notes to where you can sign up for that one.
Yeah, and I'm sure that knowing the gang over at Hogan Lovells, it'll be a well-presented webinar. And if you have the time, I would suggest you do it, because they're usually on top of the regulation game. And like Max said, the whole how they worked with CNN to get their authorizations for flying over people it's going to be a really fascinating conversation. And last but not least, our other organization, AOPA, is going to have on November 10th at 8 p.m., Drones in the Legal Landscape. Now, of course, we know that the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association is opened its doors to unmanned aerial system pilots and has been doing a lot of outreach. And this is another one of those live chats. And we will have a show note link in the show notes to them. And this one's in the evening. So although I will admit that it will be this is recorded tomorrow, isn't it?
That's right. It's November 10th. So yeah, this one, I would have liked to have had this one a week ago. Only the few of you that listen to this episode almost immediately after it comes out and are able to attend the webinar that evening will have the opportunity. I'm going to try. It may be a little tough for me, but if I can get in, I will.
Oh well, maybe this single bachelor will do it this time. So we'll see if I can get in tomorrow.
Good.
All right, I guess our webinar seminars etc. are done. Should we talk some news?
We have an update from Boeing, don't we?
Boeing has completed the acquisition of Aurora Flight Sciences, effective November 8th. Boeing completed the acquisition of Aurora Flight Sciences, a world-class innovator, developer, and manufacturer of aerospace platforms and autonomous systems. Aurora will operate under Boeing Engineering. That's interesting. It sounds like they're putting them towards the developmental side of the house and not the production side, right, Max?
That's what we talked about a few episodes ago when this first broke. So still operating under the same organization within Boeing. And as was reported previously, this subsidiary is going to be called Aurora Flight Sciences, a Boeing company.
It'll be interesting to see where this goes. I'm looking forward to the technology and see what Boeing does with this aspect of after acquiring some of the other drone programs. So another one of those consolidations we talked about in January. It's hard to believe it's November, and we're going to have to do a recap of if our guests were right and what we're going to forecast for 2018 already, Max.
We'll start polishing up the crystal ball and see if we can look ahead. It's kind of difficult this early in the process of creating a new industry, particularly one where a lot of the regulations are still
don't
to come.
Exist.
Yeah.
Okay. We've got UAV, UAS, SUAS, and now we have UAM. And this is from NASA. So NASA embraces urban air mobility, calls for a market study. This was from SUAS News and Ken on our Slack listener team. NASA's Aeronautic Research Mission Directorate, or ARMD, is expanding its research scope to include urban air mobility. Okay, Max, we've got another. We never did come up with that webpage of all of our acronyms. So what's urban air mobility?
Well, in the article, it's defined as, quote, a safe and efficient system for air passenger and cargo transportation within an urban area, inclusive of small package delivery and other urban UAS services, which support a mix of onboard and ground piloted and increasingly autonomous solutions.
Okay, folks, just so you know, I'll put it in one word, taxis.
Yeah, well, yeah, unmanned aircraft, UAS in the urban environment. Now, the ARMD has had a couple of different initiatives over the years. The Unmanned Aircraft Systems Integration in the National Airspace System Project, or UAS and the NAS, that was started in 2011, and they looked at integrating larger UAS over 55 pounds into the national airspace. And then in 2015, UTM started the UAS Traffic Management Project, and that focused on, or is focusing on, smaller drones at lower altitudes. But now we have UAM, Urban Air Mobility, sort of a new initiative from NASA.
NASA's Associate Administrator for Aeronautics, Jawan Shin, says, quote, "We plan to conduct the research and development and test the concepts and technologies that establish feasibility and help set the requirements. Those requirements then serve to make using autonomous vehicles, electric propulsion, and high-density airspace operations in the urban environment safe, efficient, and economically viable." So urban air mobility issues to look at vehicle safety certification, cybersecurity. There you go, Max. You've always been chafing at the bit for that. Noise impacts and community acceptance, and airspace integration. I like the cybersecurity, and interesting about noise. We haven't really talked about noise effects in UAVs over our period of time, have we, Max?
And it's particularly an issue, one would think, in urban areas. So, for example, if you're surveying crops or inspecting towers, you're dealing with, well, first of all, low density of drones. And you're also talking about operations in areas that are not very populous. But if you start looking at operating drones in cities or in urban environments, you're probably talking about something very different. And, you know, if you think about it, maybe noise becomes a serious issue. You've got potentially more drones flying in a smaller space, and you've got more people. You've got areas that are bounded by buildings and things. And I think noise has something that they really do need to look at.
And of course, growing up as a base civil engineer, noise was always, the neighbors were always complaining about noise, even when airplanes weren't flying. But it's interesting because one of the things that drones do is use electricity. So, but rotors make a lot of noise. You know, most people don't realize that it's not the main rotor of a helicopter that makes all the noise, but the tail rotor. So it's interesting that we're going to be studying noise and whether these are going to be feasible, economically feasible, and what urban people are going to think about having cars and trucks and drones flying over the heads all day long.
So the ARMD here has awarded some contracts to Booz Allen Hamilton and also to Crown Consulting. And they're looking for them to conduct some market studies. They want to look at the policy, the economic, social, environmental, and legal barriers to enabling UAM. And they also want them to estimate how much potential demand there is for urban air mobility, both now and looking ahead into the future. So it sounds like that's kind of the next step. Don't know the timeline for those studies to be conducted by Booz Allen Hamilton and Crown Consulting, but maybe we can find out. I imagine it'll take a little bit of time to conduct those surveys, but I think the results should be pretty interesting and would kind of inform the next steps for the UAM initiative.
Yeah, the potential demand is the interesting aspect for me. It's okay. What happens if this comes through and everybody goes, nah, that would be very interesting. That would, here we've been wanting to do this all along, and the general public are going to go, nah. But so we'll keep our eye open on this. And I know we have NASA listeners. So if anybody's involved, reach out to us because we'd like to talk some more about it. Okay. When we started this show, one of my biggest complaints was drones and their impact on aircraft. We have lots and lots of pilots who were pretty sure that drones were going to fly through the windshield. Well, in Scientific American, here's how drones do and don't threaten passenger aircraft. So someone's actually looks like they're starting to do studies on what happens when a quadcopter hits an airliner.
Yeah, and we've had a couple of drone strikes recently. There's the case of the civilian drone that hit a U.S. Army UH-60M Black Hawk helicopter that was flying low over Staten Island in New York. There was some damage to the main rotor blade, to the window frame, as well as to the transmission system. And then I think within a month of that event, there was a drone strike in up at Quebec where a Beechcraft King Air was struck. And in this case, there wasn't a lot of damage. There were some scratches on the wing's top surface, and the de-icing system also suffered some scrape marks. But here we have some actual encounters, if you will, and people are asking the question, is this a real threat or not? Bottom line right now is that there isn't a whole lot of data that defines the damage that small drones might cause when hitting a manned aircraft. But there's a number of studies that have been conducted recently that look at sort of bits and pieces of it.
Well, the first one is, and they worked hard at this one, I'm sure, CRASH, which stands for the Crashworthiness for Aerospace Structures and Hybrids. At the University of Buffalo, which is SUNY, the State University of New York, they've spent years collecting data on over 150 drone models using computer simulations to study the potential threat to aircraft. Javed Baynor, founder and director, says, quote, "We're not only categorizing the drones and figuring out what their damage footprint would be on different locations on a number of different aircraft types and engines, we're also looking into the possible damage mitigation methods." So they're already moving one step ahead. Okay, here's what's going to happen, and how are we going? If it does happen, how do we mitigate it? And Max, you have a lot of expertise in that, because contained failures is one of the expertise when you're dealing with jet engines, isn't it?
Well, sure. If you have some object strike a jet engine, or you know, ingest it into the engine, it's going to cause some damage, most likely, especially if it's of any size. And you want to design things so that the engine contains to the greatest extent possible all the damage. It doesn't start spitting fan blades or turbine blades out through the case into the wings or the fuselage. So that's a design criteria, and there's testing associated with that. But there hasn't been any testing when it comes to ingestion of drones into operating jet engines. There's some speculation about what the damage might look like, but there hasn't been any real testing. As you can imagine, testing doesn't come easily. I mean, you just can't take $4 million engines or $12 million engines and start throwing drones into them and seeing, you know, how long do they last. It's kind of an expensive endeavor. But the UK Department for Transport and Military Aviation Authority, they concluded in 2016 that drone collisions could be much worse than bird strikes. They actually did shoot different sized drones at helicopter and aircraft windshields. Now, it's obviously easier to test a strike against a windshield than it is against an operating jet engine. And they found that in some cases, drones as small as a 1.5 kilograms could break through the windshield. So that's another study that we have.
The third study was from George Mason University in 2016, and that there are 10 billion birds in the U.S. airspace, but only hundreds of bird strikes each year. Compared to the enormous populations of birds, damaging bird strikes are rare, according to the report, which concluded the risk to the airspace caused by drones weighing up to 2 kilograms as minimal. So they're looking at it as, okay, we have a sample of a very large population, and the amount of bird strikes that occur is small, so that even a small population of drones, be it large and growing, it still would be, there would be minimal risk.
Of course, that's looking at it from a statistical probability standpoint, right? Which is fine, unless, you know, you're in that one aircraft that happens to be the outlier, you know, outside of the normal distribution, let's say. And then you have a situation where you might have loss of life. So while statistically the probability of an impact may be low, the consequences, well, we don't know. If the consequences are very high, then we care a lot about that, even though the probability is low.
Well, or more to the point, you can't fix, there's no calculation for stupidity for someone who actually does deliberately fly a drone in the airspace around an airport, where, you know, birds, they tend to be smarter and they try to stay away from large airplanes. Somebody deliberately flying a drone near an airport is going to increase the probability of a strike. Don't you agree?
Yeah. There's an interesting quote from Michael Kochenderfer. He's the director of the Stanford Intelligent Systems Laboratory at Stanford University. And he said there weren't any drone collisions until now. And when you consider how many flights there are, I think it confirms my suspicion that there is not this insane risk of planes going down regularly, as sometimes the media had us fear would happen. But then he describes these recent incidents, the two we mentioned a few minutes ago, as, quote, a wake-up call to drone operators about the potential impact on aviation safety. So we have a ways to go, I think, in terms of just really, really understanding what the potential threat is and how that should be mitigated. But, of course, that's a big part of what the FAA wants to make sure is embodied in the regulations that are created, right? They want to have a safe aviation environment. And in many respects, we just don't have the data or the experience right now to do that. That's another reason why things are not moving ahead at lightning speed.
Wow. Way to bring that one back, my hero, the podcasting expert. Let's face it, folks. We can't fix stupid. I've said that all along. But fly safe, do the right thing, and we'll be better off. And if you see something, say something. If you see some guy flying a drone in the middle of the airspace, you know, you need to say something. It's in all of our best interests. So I guess that's enough preaching. So, Max, I think we're running a little bit close to our time. Should we wrap this up?
I think that'll do it for this episode of the UAV Digest. We want to thank all of you for listening. You can find us at theuavdigest.com. If you want to go straight to the show notes, they're at theuavdigest.com/218. And we encourage you to do that because there's a lot of material in the show notes, lots of links to additional information. You might want to take a look at that. And we'd also like to thank this episode's sponsors, Go Engineer and AircraftLauncher.com. We really appreciate their support. They help make this possible.
And of course, how do you support us? Well, besides listening to us every week, which we, Max and I, always appreciate, we'd like you to join our Slack listener team and get into some more in-depth conversations with our experts that lurk there. You can do that by sending us an email to feedback@theuavdigest.com. And Max or I will send you an invite to our Slack listener team. Or you can join our Facebook page at facebook.com/UAVDigest. or join our Twitter feed, our very large Twitter feed, and that would be twitter.com/UAV Digest. And of course, now that we can do 280 characters, it'll be even more interesting. And last but not least, we'd love for you to leave some feedback for us on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. Become a patron of the show at patreon.com. Or what you can do is buy some swag at our Cafe Press store. And of course, all those links you can find at theuavdigest.com. So I guess that wraps up this show. Next week, we'll be having a webinar ourselves, if we can figure it out. So this is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thank you for listening.